Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. The show tapes live some weeks on Thursdays at 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Check my Twitter feed, ANNZAC, for more. Enjoy the show. Welcome to AnCast. I'm Zach Burchie. Jacob's here.
Hey, everybody.
Jacob's always here.
I'm always here.
I wouldn't have it any other way.
I live here.
You do live here. Well, you're
I'm
sitting
right
in
behind you you're, right now.
You're sitting in the very desk that you do all of your work from.
I am.
You are. Mm-hmm. All right.
I've always been here.
It's been a week.
Mm-hmm.
Had a good show last week. Back for more this time. Watched a ton of stuff.
Yeah, a lot of stuff to discuss.
Before we get to all of this anime and Godzilla, though, I wanted to take a moment to quickly plug Vice and Luna, which is starting a new storyline this coming Tuesday. Mm-hmm. Put a lot of work into that one. We are moving over to like manga style screen tone. Take a look if you haven't checked it out yet. Mm-hmm. I'm writing that. I'm enjoying it.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me how you feel about it. Mm-hmm. I want to know.
We're excited about the storyline. It's a little bit of a take sides. We had a storyline that's like sort of take sides in a shipping way, and this is a little more take sides in like a how do you feel about anime
in a philosophical way.
Yeah,
it is it's intended to be sort of a philosophical argument between two different ways of looking at something.
Fandoms, yeah.
That's kind
of
how it goes.
Fandom,
yeah. Anyway. So I also wanted to mention that I have been. Like a man dying of thirst who comes across an oasis in the desert. I have been feasting upon Westworld.
Oh my god! Yes,
on
yes.
HBO. And somebody asked me like, "What?" Like I saw some commentary on Twitter saying like, "Oh, the cracks are starting to show on this." Not for me.
No,
every episode's better than the last. I'm totally taken with it in every aspect. Yeah. I love that show.
It could be. I mean, I wonder if people they're saying cracks and they mean like, oh, this could get really Lindelof-y. Not that Lindelof is.
Yeah,
involved.
It could be like
Thank
losty,
but
so far it's not too losty.
No, I don't think they're setting up anything that seems like they don't have enough of an answer to it that I'm comfortable. It doesn't seem like. Oh no, the polar bear appeared in the jungle or whatever. It's
well, like, if it's Lost, that would be a letdown. But does anyone remember how fucking great the first
season of
Lost
was,
is?
Right? Yeah.
That was like perfect television.
Yeah.
And then they so far, it, this but... feels like perfect television to me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm totally in love with it. If you are not watching it, watch it. It feels like it's set up to say, this is where I have to manage my expectations because mm-hmm. I'm not reading any reviews. I'm not looking at anything. I'm not looking at fan theories. I'm not reading anything because I don't want it predicted.
I just want to enjoy it.
Like, I just don't really need it predicted for me, whatever's going to happen. So I decided not to look at any of that stuff. It has enhanced my enjoyment of the show because all I do is look forward to the new episode. I don't, like, what?
I was just laughing about what happened a second ago.
Okay, all right. Now, see, when I edit, it's going to be really weird, and people won't know I'm talking about.
Start again. Just start from...
No, I'm leaving all this in, and then people will not know.
Somebody asked if we've seen the original movie, Westworld. I have seen it, yes.
No, I have not seen it in a long time. I mean, I've seen, like, chunks of it on TV, and the like, mm-hmm. but not in a long time.
Right.
You watched it again recently.
Yeah, the really interesting thing about the original movie, it's not very good, but it's a movie from the 70s, so I'm going to get people throwing dirty cans at me for that one, but I'm not a big fan of 70s style filmmaking. There are great films from every era, absolutely every era. You know, The Godfather, Raging Bull, all this stuff, but generally 70s studio filmmaking, not really. Anyways, but... The interesting thing about it is that the 70s Westworld movie is more concerned with the idea of, how do I put this? The scary thing about it is that the robots might be robots. Like, the idea is, like, is this perfect paradise and they're perfect replications of humanity, but, like, when things go sour, it's that they turn into beep-boop robots. And they're gonna kill us. It's that kind of fear.
They just turn into killbots.
Yeah, it's that fear of technology that, oh no, like... The robots will be inhuman. And interestingly, like, so the Westworld TV series, it's flipped. The scary thing about the robots and the scary thing about the whole thing is that they are human and that we are committing human atrocities against creatures that will remember.
You know?
And so, which is much more interesting and way more relevant to the way that technology has actually evolved.
Yes.
So,
right. It feels like it's set up to say something profound, and exactly. I don't know if it's going to. So, what I was saying earlier was mm-hmm. That's where I have to manage my expectations.
Right.
I have to be okay with this eventually not saying anything profound, mm-hmm. but it feels like it totally could.
Just the very premise by its very nature, even if it doesn't end up making a firm statement, the premise all by itself and the way that it's been detailed gives other people, even if the show doesn't say, it's kind of like Game of Thrones, even if the show itself doesn't really have anything to say, which Game of Thrones kind of doesn't, the setup gives people...
Game of Thrones definitely doesn't.
However, there's enough meat there that people can generate their own topics and their own perspectives on what is happening, and so the discourse in and of itself kind of becomes the depth of the show. So I think Westworld has that capacity, has that weight.
Yeah. It's the most interesting thing in the world. All I want to know is what's going to happen. Okay. Like, and it's scratching several itches at once because of the theme park thing, which I'm obviously into.
Oh yeah, I'm down. I want to see the other theme parks that they had because they show you like, oh, once there were other parks, it wasn't just Westworld. Westworld's the one that's been maintained either because it's cheapest or because it's most
right.
popular. But it's like, oh, they had others, and it's like, I want to see fucking Fantasyland or Dinosaur Land or whatever.
There's a storage shed that they go into at one point that is in the old Welcome Center for whatever it was previously.
Delos was the name of the multi-park. It's like Disneyland.
Oh, like the OVA Delos?
No, I think, maybe the OVA took that name, but it's
no, this would have taken the name from that. Or no, the OVA would have taken it from...
Yeah, exactly, from Westworld.
Oh, okay.
So it's called Delos. It's like Disneyland has Fantasyland and Magic Kingdom or whatever. Like, so Delos had Westworld and Roman World and,
okay.
and Prehistoric Planet or whatever. Like, so, but all of those have closed down, and if we just have the plaza that's being used as a storage shed, so it's like, oh my god, what were the other...
So the only thing left is Rape and Murder Land.
Yeah, Rape and Murder Land, which ostensibly people paid the most and takes the least... I'm sure it takes the least amount of money to upkeep, because all that doesn't really look like it's terraformed. It looks like it was, like, naturally that way, and they just have to create, like, horses and people, which isn't as complicated as I'm sure some other stuff was. So,
yeah. Interesting. Well, yeah, and so, but when they go down into that storage shed, there's like a globe and accoutrement from like an old theme park thing. And if you're a Disneyland nerd, that stuff is just catnip. It's just like, oh, what did they make? Did they make fake theme park, like fake old theme park stuff? Mm-hmm. Show it to me.
Yeah.
Show me the books where they made fake Imagineering for all of these rides.
In my face.
Like, yeah. Just give me all of that stuff.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, it's really, really good. It's totally like edge of my seat week to week TV.
Yeah.
Watch Westworld. Anyway, we watched a ton of stuff, so we should get to it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to start? Start with the shows. Let's start with a fall show. Let's get through the shows first. We'll do the movies last.
Okay.
So, what fall show were you watching?
Well, I mean, the number one, in terms of, like, discussion and excitement right now, show, and it's not just an Anna-Twitter thing, this appears to be the case, Yuri on Ice is blowing up the anime sphere right now.
Seems like it.
More than the other stuff currently. It just had a really strong first three episodes, and so people are kind of losing their minds over it. And a lot of famous ice skaters are... watching it and talking about it, including the inspiration for Victor, Evgeny Plushenko, is watching the show and talking about it, so that's wacky, and, you know.
It's cool.
It's really, yeah, it's really kind of taken off a little bit.
It's a really good show. I was a little lukewarm on it at first. Last week, I watched the second episode right before we taped and was like, all right, now I get it. And with the third episode, I'm like, this is really obviously the best thing this season. Obviously.
The three-episode test is a pretty valid test for a lot of anime, because it has gone from a thing in fandom to a thing that producers now think about when they're making anime. So it's kind of... The third episode is usually a nice, strong breaking point for what direction a show is going to take, and Yuri on Ice decided to just kind of create this giant climax inside of three episodes that was really, really pretty surprising to see. I say surprising to see because it is super gay. This is like the gay paradise kiss. It is extremely explicit about the romantic and sexual friction between Victor and Yuri. And
well, we've been getting into it over this because you are, and I think rightly so, excited about how gay the show is.
Yeah.
And to me, it just seems like the show is it's a gay show. It was always going to be that. That's why are we impressed with that? But I feel like I understand your way of thinking. I just personally, it's like, yeah, it's a gay romance about a bunch of gay dudes.
Well, I'm excited about it because it is, like, there's a difference.
I mean, it's more than that, but...
Right, there's a difference between stuff for titillation, which is totally fine, and what I expect from a lot of anime, like, a lot of boys' love is stuff for titillation. It's not really meant to be textual.
Right, okay,
romance, so, which is why the characters will say things like, well, I'm not gay, but just for you, that kind of a thing. Mm. And they're characterized as, here's a female-coded character, here's a male-coded character. And they even, like, in Yuri on Ice... Yuri basically learns to be seductive by embracing his feminine side, but they're not saying, like, oh, well, I'm the female in this relationship. Like, he still acts like a guy, and he's still characterized as a more complex, like, person. It's not just a sort of facsimile for a hetero relationship. It's just very directly about a sexual or an artistic awakening between a mentor and a pupil and where that's going to go. Perhaps some dark places. Dramatic places. Like, I don't think that he and Victor are going to, like, suddenly be in a relationship. I think it's going to be a little awkward and we're going to see more of Victor's flaws. But it is about that. It is not just a, teehee, look, they almost kiss. Like in Free, where somebody has to give somebody else mouth-to-mouth, but it's not really a... You know, like it's not implying any relationships between them. It's just supposed to be sort of you looking at this and, oh, you're the dirty one because you're construing, etc. This is just the text of the story. This is just what it's about. And, yeah, like, I the first two episodes did not indicate to me that that would be the case. It was maybe, but I don't know. And the third one is just like, nope, we are making this as explicit as possible that that's what this is about. So... I'm excited. Like, I think that they could still totally back off of it. It could still be like, well, we can't make this really explicit because Japan broadcast standards. But, however, they could go completely in on it. And at the very least, I think it's obvious that textually it's supposed to be about two men that have feelings for each other. So, or at least one guy who has feelings for the other one who is might have some emotional issues and can't connect with people. But we'll see what happens.
Right. I think you've explained it pretty well. I think I understand it better now. I think I sort of take that kind of thing for granted because there's a little bit of it on American television. Mm-hmm. And it is really rare to see anything that's this open about it in just like it's TV anime.
In anime, yeah. Because anime is so much about like the shows that have all female casts are for men and the shows that have all male casts are for women right now. Like it's not a one-to-one. But that is a thing that certainly Western viewers would have to... Western people who aren't familiar with anime would hear about that and go, what? Why? And it's like, well, because a lot of this is about sexual fantasy.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, so it's not necessarily about gay men. It's, anyway. But this show is, it seems.
Yeah, and I think my earlier summation of it was basically rooted in taking it for granted. Mm-hmm. And not really appreciating it for what it is. That doesn't mean we're going to be like, oh, whoa, they're gay. But, like, at least now I feel like after you've explained it that way, mm-hmm. I can appreciate it more and be a little less, like, blasé about what it represents, mm-hmm. which is important. Because when things come out like this, you should make a big deal out of it. Because if you make a big deal out of it and a lot of people watch it and it actually becomes a success,
right?
This is anime.
Right.
They will make more things like it.
Yes.
Absolutely, you'll see more like it in 6 months.
Yeah,
you know.
So I really hope this is successful.
So
people want this, like, this more explicit instead of just being a teasing, like.
Yeah, and this is actually a wider point that I think is important to make. The way anime is right now, if you're really into a show, mm-hmm. and you can actually get people to start talking about it and like fuel discussion, mm-hmm. you can like. Influence, like the audiences are small enough to where if you really have the ability to push a show and say like, I love this show, everyone should pay attention to the show. Mm-hmm. If you can uptick it by a few thousand viewers, 4,000 or 5,000 viewers, something like that, I feel like you could make an impact on that show's fortunes.
Right, yeah.
You know? Definitely. Like, that's how small the industry is. And it's not like it's minuscule or anything, but it is like there's so much anime and, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, Uranus on Crunchyroll's popularity thing, which is not a one-to-one for views or anything, but it's a general indicator. It is sitting next to Naruto and One Piece right now. It is the most trafficked, it seems, from what we can see publicly, show of the season, and it's like it seems like it shouldn't be, but so that's really remarkable to me, and so I hope that it keeps up the quality, and you know, kind of goes and isn't afraid, it doesn't do the shy peeping, like we don't commit to anything, like it commits to being about something and being kind of visceral, like that would be cool, but you know.
Yeah, well, it's a great show, I look forward to it every week. I'm going to briefly talk about March Comes In Like a Lion.
Oh, yeah.
Did you keep watching this?
I caught up, yeah, recently. My feelings on it really haven't changed.
Yeah,
I was very explicit about it. You go ahead.
Mine have gone down. I was going to keep watching it. Now I don't know. It sort of went in the other direction where the first one started out melancholy exploration of depression for like 15 minutes and then like, you know, 7 minutes of zaniness, and then this went the other way, so, like, 12 minutes of zaniness, and then, like, it's, like, 10 minutes of kind of some introspection sort of near the end. Mm-hmm. Also, the story is, like, straight sitcom, and it's, like, lost parents, like, two sets of people who lost their parents come together, mm-hmm. I guess, and it's very low stakes. Originally, I thought I was kind of in the mood for it, but the way this is being directed and the pace that it's going at and the sort of refusal to stick to a tone. Like, his life is super wacky and, by all accounts, fulfilled. It is a busy social life with lots of people in it who care about him and care about his well-being. Mm-hmm. And so it is difficult for me to wrap my brain around the fact that he's this depressed all the time. I mean, I get it, but it's not enough. It's not really pulling me in. So I think I'm going to step away from it and see how it winds up wrapping up, maybe near the end, but yeah, I was pretty like, nah, I don't think so. Because it introduces right away like two senpai characters, not really senpai characters, like peers at a shogi group who are total zany, like, you know, kind of one-dimensional shonen manga characters, you know. And they're literally like grabbing him, rubbing on his head and saying like, oh, you're always this way. It's like, yeah, this is just like every other
that
fucking
was my
thing.
The thing is that he immediately turns into like a manzai routine where he's, I forgot what the word is for the straight guy, but he's like the straight man in a manzai routine whenever there's zany stuff happening. And then it goes back into the depths of his depression. And it's like, look, there were zany scenes in, say, Evangelion, too,
yeah,
where everybody's messing with Shinji, and he's like, wah!
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't act like, he didn't immediately default into this sort of narrow, like, I'm the straight man in this comedy routine. You could still see, his personality didn't change. Like, you could still see that he was being haunted by this other stuff. It didn't, I don't know. I'm comparing the comedy scenes in Evangelion to the comedy scenes, I guess, in March Comes In Like a Lion, which may not be fair, but one of them seems like a complete tonal shift that drops everything, and then the other one seems like a consistent portrait of a character to me. Evangelion seeming that way, while March Comes In Like a Lion, like, I don't know, it just seems like a tone jumps, and I wasn't really, but yeah, my feelings haven't changed from the first time I described in detail how I felt about it, so yeah, whatever. Drug.
Sad Boy and Shogi.
Sad Boy and Shogi. Shogi.
Did you say Shad Boy?
Shad Boy and Shogi.
Walter Matthau is here.
Walter Matthau.
I'm enjoying the anime.
March Comes In Like a Lark.
Hey, Joe! I like the big ashes. You know those
ashes?
You know those anime girls, they smash their butts together. I like it.
Cheek to cheek, that's what Walter Matthau likes. I can't.
All right. Let's talk about, let's talk about Girlish Number. God, I can never, like, I want to say Girlish Figure so much.
I want to say Girlish Lover because that's the name of the opening to Ore Shura, which is a show nobody should remember, but I do, and the opening is extremely catchy, and every once in a while it gets stuck in my head and makes me want to die. Anyway,
Girlish Number, I liked it again. I didn't love it, but I think that's just because, like, I liked Yuri on Ice so much more and was like, oh, this is obviously the best thing this season, so Girlish Number seemed fine. It's so mean. That show is so mean. The premise is basically like there's a production committee. Mm-hmm. They have to get this anime out about this light novel that nobody in the room has any respect for. Mm-hmm. They're
has even read.
They're like, these character designs are all fucked up. They don't look anything like this guy's style. And they're like, well, let's get someone else to animate a preview that'll get the fans all hyped up, and we'll go with these fucked up character designs anyway for the actual show.
Right.
Like, this is the premise that they're setting up.
The idea is that the producer in this case, I don't know if he's a producer or an agent. I don't remember. I think he's both. He is like just focused on the synergy of getting this shit out real fast, selling more light novels and idol girl singles at the same time. So it's not really about the quality of the product. And so what's going to turn out is something like, we assume, Sky Wizards Academy. And, and you know, so we...
Man, it's anyone who remembers that can always bust it out as ultimate line. Sky Wizards Academy. Yeah, everyone goes, you win.
I could say Chivalry of a Failed Night, but I gotta say...
That one was a little popular.
Right.
Sky Wizards didn't even make daily streaming.
The lowest rung, right?
Yeah.
And, right, so, but I don't... Oh, you said it's really mean. I feel like the characters are mean. I don't feel like the world is mean. Does that make sense? I feel like the...
yes, I get you.
I feel like the author isn't like, I hate the anime industry and here's what's wrong with it, It's more like, here's the personalities that can come together in the anime industry to make it a little miserable for people, but we can still have empathy for them. It's really the same character tone that was in Snafu, and I liked that about Snafu. Like, even though I don't like Snafu for other reasons, like, the tone, the timbre of all the very cynical and mean characters and how they rebounded off each other was good. Like, it was good characterization. So Girls' Number is the same thing. Also, I really like the five girls they've set up. We've barely met them, and we already know a lot about all their personalities, and they're all completely different in ways that are really good for bouncing off each other. So I liked that a lot. Like, I could tell you like a paragraph on every single one of those five girls. Which is really impressive, and so I like that. So yeah, I'm still stoked about the show. It is mean, but it's mean in a way that I like. I don't feel like it's mean-spirited.
Yeah, I wasn't suggesting that, now I like it, like I'm not into it anymore or anything. It was just, this is really mean. Like, these characters are really mean to each other.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's all.
Yeah.
Just an observation. But I'm definitely going to keep... I like what they're doing with this production on this light novel, because you suspect that this is how some of these go down.
Mm-hmm. And I think that...
Because some of those shows...
You know, Wataru, the guy who wrote it, like, Wataru, the guy who wrote it, like, he always had some really... He had some really cutting observations about high school behavior and cliques and people who rebel against those cliques and all that stuff. Like, he had some really cutting observations in Snafu, but they were buried under the, like, too cool for you, too many adjectives and adverbs, completely outlandish dialogue. So you couldn't really appreciate... I had to decipher them to appreciate them, and then I couldn't appreciate them in the moment. A Girlish Number, the dialogue is just natural, and so all of his cutting observations are really just... They work. So I'm really happy to be excited about this, because I felt like I wanted to like Snafu and was always being held back by it, and now it's just like, oh, thank God, he just got rid of that terrible prose, and I can appreciate what he has to say.
Hmm.
So, you know.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to more episodes for sure. Okay, so before we get to movies, briefly, Izetta the Last Witch. So, I dropped my expectations for, like... pacing or anything, and just said, all right, I'm just going to go along for whatever ride this is. Uh-huh. And the most recent episode was a lot more interesting, a lot more exciting to me anyway. Uh-huh. A lot of people seem to think that it's very, very even, and I'm a little bit of an outlier thinking episode two was kind of dull. But I thought the third one was good, and it was exciting in a way that the previous one was. It still feels like it's balancing on the edge of a knife of creepiness, and it'll get to creepy point at some point. But I'm not going to sit here and trash it for being something that I think it might do.
Absolutely,
and even then, if it does do that, it's not automatic shit. It doesn't mean it's going to be terrible. Maybe it'll be good, you know, but... Right now, I just wish there was a character I could hang on to, because
exactly.
There's nothing like, for there's me. Not... Like, Izetta's not a character. The main character doesn't feel like a rich. She feels like a princess. Uh-huh. But she is. She's just a fantasy fairy tale princess. Uh-huh. So, you know, there's not a lot of characters.
I was surprised by how much of the third episode was... I mean, I'm not surprised, but how much of the third episode was taken up with military fetishism and the horrors of war. Like, a combination, military fetishism, like, isn't this gear cool? We've detailed it very... authentically, and the horrors of war, but it wasn't with any characters. Like, the horrors of war works better when you have, like, a large cast, and then they dwindle, and then you get a full picture. This was like, here is a stereotypical, like, hardened sergeant and young pawn, you know, whatever, a rank soldier. And like the sergeant dies, and then we just follow the rank soldier running through the trenches and stuff like that. And that's the full like first half or two thirds of the third episode is just watching John Doe run through trenches alongside beautifully rendered tanks. And it's like, you could use this time to develop the protagonists, I think, maybe. But they don't. So I guess it was what was interesting to me about Izeta is how much the appeal is obviously coming from look at this military imagery. And doesn't it fascinate you? Which, to me, not really, I don't care.
No, it doesn't for me either. They're spending too much time on that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, the troop movements, and if we go here, they'll go here, sir. Well, I'll put the troops over there. I don't fucking care.
Private. Nats fan says private. I forgot about my privates. I'm sorry. So private is the name of the like rank that I'm sure that soldier had. Anyway.
Right.
So now that I've capped, this was a terrible joke. What's the next...
Yeah, I'm gonna keep watching it. It's fine. Yuri on Ice has outclassed everything so much that it's this other stuff is like, well, it's all right.
I don't know. What I mean, like, I don't think it's outclassed everything. I'm
really,
still, I'm still enjoying Girl.
I'm not saying that like this all. I'm like, it just pales in comparison a little bit. That's all. I'm not saying everything's bad. It's just it pales in comparison a little bit.
Yeah, and that's but this is a really strong season. I would say that.
Yeah.
The things that I'm most anticipating, I would say that it's a three-way tie between Yuri on Ice, Girlish Number, and Flip Flappers, which is has not dropped the other shoe yet, but it is very good so far. So I'm excited to see more of that.
Cool. I feel like I should watch Flip Flappers because it's the other thing everyone's talking about.
I would wait until the shoe drops. I will tell you.
You tell me when that shoe drops. We'll talk about it.
Up to that point, up to this point, it's just been whimsy and amazing animation and like the lingering doubt of something dark on the horizon. But when we find out what that is, I'll tell you to.
All right. Look forward to hearing about it. We got two movies to talk about before we get to Twitter questions. The first is called Miss Hokusai. It's in theaters now in New York and L.A., and they've expanded it a little bit, I think, so it's going to run a little longer. You can see it in theaters now. It is about the daughter of the famous painter Hokusai, who painted, like, The Great Wave and a bunch of other famous
and a lot of ukiyo-e
stuff. He was a pioneer of his day, and this is about his daughter.
And also a bad dad, apparently.
And also not a great father. Yes. I am blanking on the director's name, and I feel terrible about that, but this is definitely his film, and I didn't really care for it very much, and I'm a little bummed out about that, which is why we're not really going to spend that much time talking about it. Mm-hmm. It's in theaters. You can see it for yourself.
Keiichi Hara is apparently.
Keiichi Hara, yeah. We have an interview going up with him pretty soon. Mm-hmm. Mike's review on our site, I largely agreed with him, although I'm a little harder on it, I think, than he was. Mm-hmm. It felt very aimless to me. Like, it just didn't have a narrative. I wanted it to go somewhere or... Let me into the interior life of this woman in a way that would allow me to emotionally connect with anything in the film.
Yeah.
And I couldn't because it doesn't let you anywhere near her. She is cordoned off. She's behind a fence this entire movie. Oh. Like, the emotional closeness that I felt with that character to the point where I could understand anything about her was as though I saw a portrait of her in a gallery. Uh-huh. That is the level of emotional engagement that this movie has with its subject. Uh-huh. As a result, you don't feel very much.
Yeah.
I felt nothing.
And it was frustrating. I felt things sometimes, but it was mostly just like, is this where the movie's going to go?
It never really does.
Yeah, there are a couple really striking scenes back-to-back at the midway point of the movie where it's like, oh, is this what the movie's going to be about? Is this going to be about her... like her struggle with expressing her femininity or coming up to the artistic standard of her father, who she also resents for being a bad father, or any of this. Like, there's a million directions they could have taken the story, and they don't. They show you vignettes that imply those things, but do not ever follow up on it in the arc, and then the movie just ends with a long epilogue explaining what happened to her, and, like, that's it. And... I think the movie is the purest definition of less than the sum of its parts, because the parts are very good, they're very strong, there's a lot of striking imagery in it that I really enjoyed, and there are scenes that I really enjoyed. There's a scene where she goes to She's trying to lose it with a concubine, and it doesn't really go well, and that was a good scene. There's a scene where she...
That was a good scene. I wish the whole movie was about that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, like, that would be a good angle to take, right?
Or was about her love life, or was about anything in particular about her, rather than just watching her sit there.
Right, and a scene
and
where
be distant.
There's a great scene where she takes her little sister, who is going blind and kind of weakening. She has some sort of debilitating illness. Out to see the snow, and she reflects.
That's a good scene too.
That's a good scene too. And it's like, oh, is this going to talk about her relationship with her father? And
no,
it doesn't. It picks all these angles and it doesn't follow up on anyone. And there are like these big harsh crossfades in between these big sequences.
Yeah, that like just makes it feel
change the subject entirely.
Yeah, they make it feel like a series of vignettes.
Yeah, and it's like it's frustrating.
Yeah, it was frustrating.
I really wanted to like the movie.
Me too.
It just never lets you in.
Yeah. I wanted to love it and couldn't.
Yeah,
it didn't let me.
Uh-huh. There's no reason to not let you love it.
Like I have seen plenty of Ozu films. Uh-huh. I know kind of what he's going for with this. If you're telling me he wasn't kind of aiming for an Ozu-like thing, I'll eat my hat.
Yeah.
Not in the Ozu's characters
certainly.
Have an interior life, and you see their you see it expressed. There is an expression of that.
Yeah.
This doesn't have that.
Mm-mm.
So I guess that's disappointing.
It seems like it tries and just doesn't really quite... It just never makes the connection.
Anyway.
It's a shame.
But I strongly recommend that that you see it for yourself.
Right.
I have seen a wide variety of reactions to the film. I know that Justin, for instance, liked it a lot more than I... Here's a huge surprise. Justin liked Miss Hokusai a lot more than I did.
It is, and it's not remotely... You will never be bored or unpleasant.
Yeah, no.
Unpleasant.
Yeah,
There's nothing remotely off-putting about it. Like, it's very easy to watch.
And if you get the chance to see it on a big screen, you should. Mm-hmm. Because getting to see anime that's sort of lavishly produced like this on a big screen is cool.
Right.
And it's a good-looking film. I thought it was a little visually unambitious. I was kind of surprised. It was sort of unambitious, emotional, magical realism. Mm-hmm. It was like... Halfway between a Satoshi Kon, the look was halfway between a Satoshi Kon film and a Ghibli film, and then didn't really go to the inspired extremes that either of those do. Mm-hmm. So it's just traveling down this middle lane between the two of those things and never swerving far enough over into one or the other to really have much of an impact.
Yeah.
You know, that's really what it felt like to me.
Yeah. It wasn't
a cavalcade really for the eyes either. It was pleasant, like a trip to the farmer's market. But, you know, we've seen lavishly animated Edo period stuff.
Many times, yeah.
We have seen it.
Yes. And it's a very easy movie to watch. You won't be bored or put off or anything like that. It's just that, I kept waiting to love it. I kept waiting to have an emotional through line to this character, and it kept going, nope, let's change the subject to something else that we're not going to resolve, really. And it's like,
yeah.
Shit.
But, again, not to, I'm not, this time I'm not going to launch into, and here's another thing I, go see it for yourself.
Yeah.
Rent the Blu-ray, whatever you got to do, see it for yourself. So let's talk about Hideaki Anno's Shin Godzilla. Which has an extended run. I think you can see it in theaters through this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Which we both watched a screener that they sent.
Yes.
And well, fuck, man. I was not expecting that. Okay, so
I didn't know what to expect personally.
I didn't know what to expect. I figured it would be a Hideaki Anno film, right? And his live action films are shot just like his anime are, which is a little infuriating, especially after 2 hours of Godzilla.
Weirdly enough.
But I didn't know it would just. But here's what I was not expecting. I was absolutely not expecting it to be a political hot, the equivalent of a political hot take for 2 hours. It's basically an essay with a very uplifting ending.
Mm-hmm.
Anno's opinions on all of Japanese politics
right now. And you're like, how can that fill a film? Well, if you cut out characters and a lot of plot as well, like basic plot bones and no characters, every character
just
is
commentary.
Yeah, exactly.
Political commentary.
Everybody is a voice for a political angle, and that's kind of it. Like, too can make a film that is just straight up an essay. That implies that this is in some way boring.
It's not. Yeah, it's a little boring if you don't know anything about Japanese politics.
Yeah, you have to know a little bit.
Well, we'll get
about,
to that. I want to talk about that a little later.
Okay.
But that's the thing, though. Like, if you could go through this, and I feel like you could re-subtitle all of it and have the characters just say, like, I'm a stand-in for the feckless bureaucracy and the aging generation of Japanese people who still treat our government as though, you know, it's a dog of the United States and is incapable of solving anything through immediate action and taking control of their own destiny. Then the main character comes in and says, I'm representative of today's youth. And the solutions that we could have if we all work together in a way that acknowledges all of our individual strengths and weaknesses, mm-hmm. and then Godzilla Maze will show up and say, "Hi, I'm a metaphor for nuclear power, as I have always been,
and always will be."
And then eventually it gets into the thing that got me was eventually they start discussing the fact that the name for Godzilla is taken from the English name for Godzilla.
Yes,
so
which is
he
the
introduces another
reverse.
He's introducing another little social like commentary thing in there. Mm-hmm. Everything in the film exists as a political metaphor for no other reason.
Yeah, yes,
every piece
to the
of
point
it.
Where this movie like. So you said you found it a little infuriating. After seeing so many Hollywood movies that are now being produced more homogeneously than they have ever been in history, fucking ever.
Yeah.
I am including the 50s. Movies are now, Hollywood studio films are now more homogenous and voiceless than they have ever been, to me personally. And so watching a movie that, like, is, yeah, for better or for worse, like, kind of filmed like an anime and is very...
Oh, it's an anno thing.
Yeah, I'm totally fine with it because I'm fucking bored of the
of American blockbusters.
Yeah, and so like that doesn't mean it's a better film. It's not necessarily, but it is at the very least.
I really enjoyed watching.
Right. The only times that I was bored are when his diatribeness went so far into talking heads like debating that it was like literally we don't have another plot point for another 10 minutes, and it's like, okay, I understand what you're saying, you don't have to restate it. I know that people are dumb sometimes about this and you really want to make sure that they've got your message, but I understand you don't have to go on for 10 minutes before we get the next plot point, you know. And so that was maybe the only times.
Well, that's all padding, and like, so it's shot exactly like Evangelion.
Yeah.
The camera, exactly. Mm-hmm. The camera doesn't move. Mm-hmm. It sits there at an angle. Mm-hmm. Two characters are artfully placed in the frame, and they speak to each other, and there's a little bit of movement, mm-hmm. and then it cuts to the next shot that looks exactly like
emphasis,
the previous one.
There's a big emphasis on screens and projections.
Screens and projections, text on the screen, characters.
The camera never moves.
Yeah, the camera never moves. The camera will be sitting down in the center of a table, and will have people rowed up on either side. He copies the exact same tank shots from End of Evangelion. Mm-hmm. It is shot exactly like an anime.
I
to the point where I started laughing because they're moving the camera almost never.
Well, as I say, I want to clarify. When I say the camera never moves, I don't mean there are long takes. This is a lot of quick cuts.
Yeah.
It's a lot of quick takes.
Yeah, it's like
I mean, the camera does not ever, like,
pick
dolly
up, yeah, follow
or truck
something
or crane or follow. Like, no, it does. There's the one following shot at the very beginning of the movie, and I think, like, that's kind of the only one. Oh, and there's another one.
I started paying pretty close attention to this. So
there's literally two that I can remember where the camera moves.
The camera moves a lot when he's doing his fisheye handheld lens thing, which he really likes, is a throwback to the 90s, but he loves it. So it's in the beginning of this film.
Right.
And I laughed. Immediately started burst into laughter when the first fucking shot of Shin Godzilla is a fisheye handheld camcorder from 1990 fucking five. Mm-hmm. I was like, Anna, come on, man.
Yeah, right. Well, the other two are tracking shots that follow people walking and expand into a bigger room, and then there's one that follows people walking. I thought the most striking shot that isn't just as, you know, sort of quick cut Ava cold. Analytical, like, was the one that follows these two people walking alongside a plant that's been abandoned, a nuclear plant that's been abandoned, talking about basically the final resort that they've gotten mandated from America and whether they're going to go through with it or not. And they stop walking, and the camera keeps pulling back.
Yeah.
And so they really look alone next to this dead plant, and they keep talking, and it goes for like 5 minutes, and they're just getting smaller and smaller.
Yeah,
it's great, but like. Yeah. Anyway,
the thing is, like, this sounds like we're complaining, and that's the tone of our voice. If you know how Evangelion is directed, and you like can picture it in your head, and you're watching this movie, you start laughing because it's exactly like it, and you can't unsee it.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
It's shot exactly like it. But overall, this thing has like this really uplifting final message. It's very trenchant in its criticisms of the current status quo of the establishment. Basically, the main character is kind of Bernie Sanders, like effectively, like he is arguing for an individualism on behalf of Japanese citizens. He brings together a ragtag team of outsiders who basically save Japanese society from itself, because
political heretics, nerds,
yes,
losers,
and what like, they do is and what they do is they come up with a non-destructive, non-nuclear version of a weapon to use against Godzilla that will save everybody from this nuclear threat.
Right, and it is temporary.
Yeah,
the
and so
Godzilla's
and like
is going to wake back up, but they will.
But it's this. But it's
responsible
it's,
for him. No one else will be.
But the crucial thing that happens here is that ragtag team of outsiders relying on their individual strengths come together under the banner of the motto of the film, sort of sarcastically offered at first, but sincerely offered at the end, which is just do what you like, which is not a message that would normally be in a Japanese mainstream Japanese film. Not at all. But I'm just saying that combined with the fact that they come together to put forth a specifically non-nuclear solution. Like, they're fighting against the atomic bomb. That's what they're fighting against in this movie. Not really Godzilla at the end of this film. They're fighting the American response to it.
Yeah, fighting the fact that America is like, what?
We're just going to drop a nuke on Tokyo.
And Japan is like, some of us have lived through that, and we're not really crazy.
But anyway, we're not talking about the exact solution, but whether or not they solve this problem. And so that's the message. That's ultimately the message, which is kind of a little like it's shades of like what they talk about in Terror of Resonance.
Terror in Resonance.
Terror in Resonance. And anime talks about these themes a lot. The Last Generation, like the youth breaking away from the past, Japan breaking away from the United States, you know, all of that stuff. These themes, Shin Godzilla covers like all of it in this 2-hour span.
Right, because that's all it's about.
Yeah, and that's all it's about. And so I was pretty fascinated the entire time. I was laughing a lot. Godzilla looks better.
Oh, yeah.
That's the best Godzilla I've ever seen.
Really?
The best. It is the coolest looking, the most unique. When he opens his mouth up and that purple laser comes out, it is the coolest Godzilla moment ever for me.
Yeah, I would say
ever. The and the larva stage in the beginning.
Yeah, that was hilarious. When Godzilla first showed up, so when he first shows up, I busted out laughing because it's just this disgusting dragging his like little neck on the ground and bleeding out of everything like fish with nubs. And it's like, I was laughing my ass off. I was like, is that Godzilla? And I was like, wait, I guess he's gonna like evolve or something. But when he starts out, it's just like this gross thing that's just worming its way across Tokyo looking for food. And yeah, it was funny.
Yeah.
I liked it. With like dead fish eyes.
This
but
is,
it's immediately like memorable.
This is so Hideaki Anno that the first real shot you see of Godzilla is down a tunnel of cars. You're behind the cars are going down the tunnel, and then there's a sudden eruption of blood from the ceiling coming down on the cars, and then it cuts away really fast, and you're like, watching an Anno thing.
Oh no, blood!
Yeah, and there's like, so it's not exactly the battle music from Evangelion, but they use
exactly.
It. Well, it's not exactly.
It's not as good.
Yeah, it's not exactly, but yeah, there's all that shit in there.
Yeah, it's an Anno movie, but
it's fucking really good. It like just the only thing is. Mm-hmm. I really think it's boring as fuck if you don't know or don't care about Japanese politics.
Yeah, you need to watch this movie for political commentary and for really fantastic, unique effects work, and that's kind of
absolutely. Yeah,
that is. If you are interested in those two things, you will be entertained, and if not, then just don't.
Yeah.
This is not a conventionally made film.
Yeah,
like this movie barely follows a 3-act structure, and then like it breaks a lot of action movie rules. The most prominent that I noticed being, without spoiling anything, So think of all the action movie, all the action sci-fi movies you've seen. If you watch the crew, if you watch a Motley Crue coming up with a plan to defeat the bad guy like a full half hour or 40 minutes before the movie is over, do you expect that plan to work? The answer is no. You expect that plan to in some way fail and we're going to have to figure out something else at the 11th hour. That's not what Shin Godzilla does, but because that's not the point. The point is to watch how this plan that they detailed out does work step by step. To prove the point that he was making politically. So it, you know, you could say that that's bad story structure, but it's not really the focus of this movie is its own thing. It's not really a, like, blockbuster monster smash things movie. It's a political essay. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, like, Shinji Higuchi, I've talked about this dude before. I mean, I guess he's a menace on Twitter, but, like, the stuff he does with special effects, I'm just going to watch everything he's involved in, because he comes up with the most, like, he's doing stuff visually that nobody else is doing right now.
Yeah.
Like, if every effects-driven filmmaker in the world isn't looking at his stuff, I'll be shocked, because he's doing stuff that looks so good, so cool.
Yeah.
Like, it's out of reality.
Yeah, it's out of reality. It's not like... It's practical effects.
It's not CG.
Yeah, it's practical effects. Or some people, like, if they saw Attack on Titan, they saw this, and they're like, well, I can tell it's fake. Like, the point is...
Yeah, right.
It's transcendent. It's like... it's like you're viewing, like, another reality. It's not just... It doesn't look like somebody in a rubber monster suit. It doesn't look like a perfect CG creation that's perfectly integrated with the world. It looks like you're watching a nightmare come to life.
Yeah.
And
it's like a dream.
It's transcendent in that way. It's like, yeah, I can tell that this is quote-unquote fake, but I feel like I'm viewing another plane of existence or something. Yeah. Which is great. Like, you know, effects don't have to perfectly replicate reality. Sometimes that's boring. Sometimes you can do more than that. It's art, you know? So, yeah, absolutely.
And this is definitely art. Like, it's kind of a... The definition of it, actually.
Right.
Yeah. It's a political statement, yeah. Anyway, it's a really... Yeah, shit. If you're an older anime fan, you have to see it, I think.
Right,
like, if you're familiar with Thano and his stuff, and yeah, you gotta watch it. Yeah, and the chat is saying, like, I said it's not CG. Of course, it's plenty of CG, but it's a combo of CG and tokusatsu stuff that just works, and I love the way it looks. So.
Yeah, it's very like Smashing Pumpkins music video or something.
Yeah,
music video.
Yeah, exactly.
It's something out of your nightmares. I loved it in Attack on Titan. I love it in this. It's great.
But
fish,
The thing that stunned me was that I just wasn't expecting it to function pretty much only as a political essay.
I wasn't either, but I was like, okay, sure.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited to see if they do more, great. I don't think they necessarily need to, but I'm not, like, a huge fan of Godzilla, so. Mm-hmm. Anyway, let's get to our Twitter questions. We should blow through these pretty quick here. All right. Let's see. We got a lot of questions about the nationalism, and I feel like we've discussed it. Link306 asks, huh?
I think we didn't really. I kind of wanted to mention that about.
Okay, well, we can talk a little bit more about the nationalism. Go ahead. Yeah.
No, just that people were talking about, like, oh, I can see how people construe a nationalist message out of this. So the really interesting thing about Shin Godzilla is because it speaks in vagaries. Like, there are specifics in Technobabble. There are specifics in the world of the story where they're trying to kill Godzilla, but when they're talking about political theory, it's all nebulous. It's all. High platitudes and, like, generalizations about systems that do and don't work. And it's so platitudinal and vague and open that the idea of youth taking stuff back from the old generation and solving things for Japan can be construed as nationalist. It is absolutely the opposite of what the movie is saying, 1,000% if you look close. However, because the movie is vaguer and it is more metaphorical, I can completely see how... more super right-wing young Japanese viewers would construe this as a nationalist film. I can see that completely. They're wrong. That's not the intent, but
yeah.
it is easy to see how they could misconstrue it, yes.
To me, it was pretty obvious that it isn't.
Yeah, well, no, it's obvious
that's not
to me
what
that
he's arguing
too,
for.
But I'm
at
like,
the end, he basically fist bumps the U.S.
Yeah.
The stand-in for the U.S., and they decide...
Yeah, but there are...
Oh, you're thinking for yourself and coming up with solutions that work for everybody, and we can all work together, and we're sharing things among ourselves, and we're all going to come up with the best solutions together. That's the end of the movie.
There are still... but there are also Japanese nationalists that idolize the U.S. and see... that being kind of a anyway like I'm just
well
saying,
I don't think the movie's
happening.
I don't think the movie's making the kind of weirdo colonialist
not
arguments that
not
a
all,
lot of like super right-wing Japanese people
yeah,
make.
But unfortunately I could see that being misconstrued. That's all basically all I'm saying.
Maybe it's like a Fight Club thing.
It's a Fight Club thing. It's 1,000% a Fight Club thing is what I'm saying.
Yeah, all right,
where obviously Fight Club is not saying that, but you know,
Link306 wants to know what our favorite scene was. I mean, the Godzilla attack in the middle of the movie where he goes in the middle of the city and just there's a little repeating gif that people in the chat are seeing right now of him blowing up, and it looks when the laser comes out of his mouth and he cuts down the city, it's like, oh, this is what you would hope a Godzilla movie would have in it.
Yeah.
This is what you want to see.
He barfs up all his feelings.
Yeah. It's really good. It's
I think
super
that
good.
And the my favorite shot was when Fishzilla is snaking across Tokyo and his his half-formed gills slash lungs are just sloshing out blood on people. Like, so they're running away, and they're not being crushed by his nubby feet, but his he has, like, half-gills that are becoming, like, lungs that are bleeding, and they splash down. I thought that was the most, like, oh my god, you know, no, you know, sort of shot. So that was a good one.
Like, okay, so we're getting another question in the chat saying, how exactly is it not nationalist? It's not that it isn't. It is a national, it is taking a nationalist stance. That's a really broad term. It's not a hard right wing nationalism.
Self-sufficiency, not colonialism.
It's, yes, it is not a hard right movie. Uh-huh. That to suggest that it is right wing, if anything, I would say it is fairly centrist view.
Yes.
It's fairly centrist. Mm-hmm. Anyway, let's see here. Stefan asks, unusually it took a while for the U.S. to release Miss Hokusai compared to other English-speaking regions. Why was this? I don't know. That's maybe a good question for Justin, who knows a lot about those specific things. Mm. But it did take a while for it to come out over here. They've been promoting this for like 2 years. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's one of the other reasons where it's like, go see it for yourself, please. Mm-hmm. Go see it for yourself. Let's see. No Cool Oats asks, which anime director should be responsible for Shin Gamera? I'm going with Kawamori, but I could see Hosoda working too. Mamoru Hosoda directing a giant monster movie makes me want to fucking cry.
I don't think that would
I don't want to see that. That's at all. It would turn out to be his fucking dad who loves him or something.
I don't think that's fair, but I think that the interests and the skills don't blend on that. I wouldn't say Mamoru Hosoda for a giant monster movie.
Yeah. I just wouldn't want to see that. I don't mean to be so hard on Hosoda, but man, I didn't like The Boy and the Beast.
I didn't either. I still, you know, Summer Wars is really
I'll
good.
I'll watch his next thing. Maybe it'll be good.
Yeah. I still I'll have some hoping. Love in my heart for the guy. The Boy and the Beast just wasn't good, that's all.
Yeah.
He wrote it. He's not a writer.
Directors I would want to see do a Godzilla movie. I mean, if we're talking like, well, they're going to direct it and it's going to be like their anime, like Anno, because it's all exactly like his anime. Mm-hmm. I mean, Kawamori, like, it would be weird and incomprehensible.
Yeah. It would
be a weird-ass movie mm-hmm. with a lot. But if he did, like, Kawamori's political Godzilla movie, I definitely want to see that.
What nine hells? Yeah, I'm going to say Kawamori. I'm going to agree with you.
That would be an interesting one. That's a good suggestion. No culottes. Anybody wondering asks, Isetta has me interested in the depiction of war, the military, and anime. What are the best examples to check out? Well, military anime is a genre, and the one people would probably point to the most right now is Girls in Panzer. Mm-hmm. That is for military otaku.
Right.
So is Upat, right? That's the gun.
Upate?
Yeah.
I don't think people remember that one so much.
No, but that's just what comes to mind. Mm-hmm. I know people really loved that show, Gun Parade March, which was mm-hmm. like that.
Right.
What else? What other, like, military fetishy kind of shows?
It's not my forte.
Yeah, it's not my forte either.
I can't... the most recent one that pops into my head is Gate, and I can't recommend that one. Just, like, just as... Even as military
Well, but if
fetishism.
You're... But if you're, like, okay, but you... Things about the military, Gate's
even
a good
Even as military fetishism, it isn't really that...
Okay, well, it exists.
It doesn't go into detail about that stuff, really.
It exists.
Yeah.
And if you just want, like, wartime, like, maneuvers and stuff, Arslan goes into that stuff a lot. Doesn't it?
No.
Doesn't it have, like, tactics and shit?
No.
No, I thought it did.
No.
That's only in the beginning?
Yeah.
All right.
And I'm not going to say... Arslan isn't really about tactics very much at all.
No, but, no, like... All right, anyway. No, you're right.
Yeah.
I'm misremembering.
Yeah, military lavishly detailing, like...
Legend of the Galactic Heroes is coming out.
Yeah. Gun part. I feel like lavishly detailing gun parts and stuff is different from lavishly detailing military tactics.
Yeah, sure. I'm just throwing it all out there, though.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. It's not really my forte, but I would say Girls in Panzer is definitely the most, you know. It covers both of those things, so.
Steve asks, I really enjoyed Shin Godzilla. Does Godzilla follow the rule of Sonic, where the more friends he has, the harder his movies suck? Man, I don't like to draw a lot of comparisons between anything in Sonic the Hedgehog, but...
No.
My attitude, like, so this was the best Godzilla movie I think I've seen maybe ever. Yeah, probably ever. Mm. I'm not a huge Godzilla fan. The movies are too slow and they always say the same thing and you're just waiting for Godzilla to show up and that gets boring. Right. And a lot of Godzilla movies are super boring. My favorite Godzilla thing, aside from this now, mm-hmm. is like Gamera versus Gueron, which is an old MST3K episode.
Mm-hmm.
that's kind of it. Like, I've seen a ton of Godzilla movies, but, like, I don't remember them that well.
The only ones I remember strongly are the American one, which I wouldn't recommend, the original, which I definitely would, and Shin Godzilla.
Yeah, the original, sure, of course.
Yeah, Shin Godzilla, which I would recommend. And when I say I recommend the original, I mean watch the original Japanese cut of Gojira, because, yeah, not, yeah.
Right.
And I would recommend Shin Godzilla if you really want a political angle on this and really want to see a unique rendering of Godzilla. But yeah, like a lot of the older Hokier ones where he has like a bunch of friends and stuff, I've seen parts of them, but they're not memorable.
You see like the couple of minutes that have Godzilla in them, and then that's it.
It's like, oh, there's Mothra, oh, there's Gamera.
Like the idea of like, okay, now we've made, like, last year, like a couple of years ago, there was that Gareth Edwards Godzilla, mm-hmm. and then which was
not good.
I liked it more than when I walked out of the theater, I was like, that was fine. And then I saw parts of it again on TV and was like, oh, this is not fine. And there's like 5 minutes of Godzilla in it.
Yeah, I mean, which I expected 5 minutes of Godzilla, but they needed to, in the interim, like,
have an interesting story.
Yeah, that's the thing about the original Godzilla. There's not a whole lot of him in it, but the interim is really fascinating. That's why it was that's why it launched this franchise that lasted 60 years. But, like, more than 60 years? But yeah, that's the key thing. It's like, it's okay to only have 5 minutes of Godzilla, but you need to make the interim stuff interesting, either on a political level, a character level, something. They didn't do that in the American one, so.
All right. Let's see here. Dr. Phillips, R. Phillips, not Doctor. Chu Odori asks, I'll just talk about Gojira, Hokusai, and he's like, no love for Nyanbo. I watched a couple episodes of Nyanbo. And it is, I like that sort of rack focus,
is cute.
Yeah, hyper real kind of look that it's going for.
I watched the first episode, it's a little children's show, and I'm not.
Yeah, I'm not, like, gonna watch a bunch of it.
I'm not gonna watch a little children's show, that's just me personally, but.
I'm too cool.
Only little children's show.
Jacob's
I'm watching
too cool.
Classicaloid, which is on NHK for families.
God. Yeah, you don't have any room to talk about
exactly.
anything.
Exactly, so Classicaloid is the babiest show that I'm gonna watch.
Subtle Doctor asks, if you're not enjoying the second episode of Izetta, did 3 draw you back in? Yeah, sure. Are you still convinced it will contain Yuri? Yeah, sure.
Absolutely, they're going to not kiss.
Yeah.
Or kiss not. We'll see what happens.
All right. 2 Spoops in a Trench Coat ask, what do you think about music from Annoworks reused in other Annoworks? Karikana music in the new Evas, Eva and Shin Godzilla. It's fine.
Yeah.
If he thinks it's like, here's a subtle nod to my previous work, you're like, you know, it's not subtle. Boo Lake Schwartz asks, I know you have checked out the first Bakano light novel. Have you read the second yet?
I haven't actually gotten to the first one.
Yeah, I know.
That was reviewed by Gabriella Ekins on site. I did not read it or review it. I haven't had time. I really want to. I like Narita's writing. I like the way it's even translated. Like, I think he's a good writer. It's pulp, but like, it's not like, I've read other Japanese light novels. I read the translation, some of the translation of Mahoka, and holy, oh my. Anyway, but Narita is a good writer. Like, he's a good pulp writer. I haven't had time. Like, I have not had time to read books. So, yeah.
All right. So that actually wraps us up for Twitter questions. Do we have any quick questions from the chat before we get going here? Mm-hmm.
Ask your pressing questions while you have the time.
Ian R.W. asks, between Boy and the Beast and Miss Hokusai, are anime films struggling with storytelling lately? I mean, I don't think it's fair to make a blanket to say, like, yes, this is a trend, just because I didn't like those two films. Plenty of people like the Boy and the Beast. Mm-hmm. Miss Hokusai has gotten more mixed reactions, for sure. But I haven't seen a prestige anime movie in a little while that I really, really, really thought was great. Anthem of the Heart was kind of okay.
Anthem of Heart is most I've enjoyed one in
in a while.
I've always felt that, like, generally if you're more interested in story, that the anime television series are more where you go. Like, there are anime movies that have really strong stories, but it's not like, you know. I'm really interested to see Kimi no Nawa, Your Name, when it comes over here, because
yeah, I really want to see that.
Like, look, I've seen Shinkai movies and they're not bad. I can't say that they're bad, but they're not, like, my tea. But, like,
I want to see this one.
My number one issue with Shinkai movies is just that they don't have enough plot momentum. Because they deal with some really strong emotions and some powerful imagery, but there's never enough plot momentum to feel like you went on a journey, even when they're an hour long. And the thing that I keep hearing about Your Name is that it has a ton of plot momentum. And that's why people are latching onto it. And I'm like, maybe that's what he was missing to make great movies. So I want to see that. And yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, anything that's that big a phenomenon, I'm curious about. Mm-hmm. I really want to know. And we have a review up by Ann Lauenroth that's really good. That really made me super curious to see it. So we'll see.
Oh, we'll see. I know what question we have to take.
Go ahead.
Somebody said, who's your favorite Yuri on Ice boy?
Well, it's Victor.
No, it's Yuri.
So
he's so, so sweet.
Here's the thing I was going to say about that. One of the things I like about Yuri on Ice is that it is sexualizing, or at least not sexualizing, but interested in the sexual life of a character that looks like Yuri. That is not a character where the show would ever be interested in his sexual interests or his sexuality to begin with. And I feel like he has a very realistic body type.
Right. Which
and a realistic face.
Super cute.
And yeah. So I appreciate that.
Like, I don't remotely have the hots for Victor. I just don't. Like, it's a very sexual show, and he's, I guess, conventionally attractive, but I'm just like, I don't. This is like a weird.
He's not your type.
Over the top Adonis thing. But Yuri, like, my heart, I can't. He's so cute. So Yuri, yeah. Screw Victor. Yuri. Come home with me, Yuri. You're adorable. I'm going to put you in my pocket and feed you and take care of you.
All right, then.
Anyway. Yuri owes 15. No, not
yeah,
Yuri owes 15.
The other guy's 15,
he's
so.
15 years old, and he's a stick. It's so gross. No.
Okay, do we have one more question? Soldred asks, are you guys watching The Great Passage? Boy, I wish I could. It has not been licensed for American streaming.
Nope. I would be eager to check that out if they bothered, but they
yeah, sure seems like something I would like.
Oh, well.
So I guess not. All right. I guess that's all the questions we have from the chat. Thanks to everybody for showing up. I guess that wraps us up. Jacob, always a pleasure.
Yep.
All right. Hey, we will see you all next week. Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to the live chat for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can find them at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, anywhere you can. Leave us a rating, a review. We'd really appreciate it. We'll see you all next week.